Hey, Dad.
Hey, big puffy version of Junebug. Where you been?
Just out dealing with things way beyond my maturity level.
You're looking a little morose, honey. What's eating you?
Just like losing my faith with humanity.
Wow, can you narrow that down for me?
I just wonder if, like, two people can stay together for good.
You mean like couples?
Yeah, like people in love.
Are you having boy trouble? Because I gotta be honest, I don't really much approve of you dating in your condition. That's kind of messed up.
No, Dad, it's not.
I mean, that's pretty skanky. Isn't that what you girls call it? Skanky? Skeevy?
Please stop.
Tore up from the floor up?
That's not what it's about. I need to know that it's possible that two people can stay happy together forever.
Well, it's not easy, that's for sure. And I don't have the best track record in the world, I know, but I've been with your stepmother for 10 years now, and I'm proud to say we're very happy. Look, in my opinion, the best thing you can do is find a person who loves you for exactly what you are. Good mood, bad mood, ugly, pretty, handsome, what have you. The right person's still gonna think the sun shines out your ass. That's the kind of person that's worth sticking with.
Yeah.
Well, good morning. It's great to have you here today. My name's Kurt, and I'm what's referred to as the pastor here at Cross Point. And we're excited you're here with us today. How many of you have seen the movie Juno, out of curiosity? Awesome. All right. How many of you have not seen the movie Juno? Okay, of those of you that have your hands up right now, how many of you plan to see the movie Juno? I know it's a few years old. All right. Not many of you, because I'm about to ruin it for you, all right? So, so if you know the movie, it's about this teenage girl who, you know, she gets pregnant, and she has to figure out what to do. And so she goes to an abortion clinic, kind of a family planning clinic, decides that's not the route she wants to go. She's living, you know, in kind of a family that's kind of messed up, and you know, they live in a middle-class community that's not so good. She's like, I'm not really sure me raising this child is the best for me or for the child. And so she decides to offer the child for adoption, to place the child in adoption. And she meets a couple that she really feels like are the ones that are going to adopt her child, and then she realizes that they're having trouble. And so, you know, her relationship with this boy, who's not even her boyfriend, I mean, he's the father of her child, but that relationship's kind of a disaster. Her mom and dad's relationship has been a disaster for years. You know, that was, her dad's now living with her stepmom. The couple that wants to adopt the child, she finds their marriage is kind of a disaster. And so what we see right here, what we just saw, was about two-thirds of the way through the film, and it was a very tender conversation between Juno and her dad. I mean, her dad's like a rock star dad. I mean, he supports her, you know, through this difficult time. And it's really a tender conversation, and she asks a very, very profound question. All right. In fact, you hear it and you're like, wow, that's a great question. And especially in her context. And in fact, it's a question every single adult, every single student, every single person at some point, married person, single person, has asked at some point or will ask at some point. And here's the question. She asks it in two different ways. She first says, I guess I wonder sometimes if people ever stay together for good. Her dad says, you mean as couples? She says, yeah, like people in love. And then she asks a different way. She says, Dad, I just need to know that it's possible for two people to stay happy together forever. In other words, Dad, I'm looking all around this place, and I've looked at you and Mom, and man, your marriage was a disaster. I mean, I see people, you know, that I know, people that are at my school, you know, teachers, their marriages are disasters. I mean, even this couple that I thought were really in a good place, and they want to adopt my child, and yet they're in a disaster. Is it possible? I mean, Dad, am I going after a pipe dream that just doesn't exist? I mean, this is her question right here. And I think that's a question all of us have had to wrestle through at some point or another. And so, you know, here's what's fascinating, is that in spite of what we've seen, In spite of what we grew up in spite of what our parents' marriage was like, our sister or brother's marriage is like, the culture we grew up around, the divorce rate, the marriage we're in right now or our previous marriage, in spite of all of that, we still think it's possible. It's amazing. We think we're a candidate for this. We think, if I could find that one someone somewhere out there, somehow, that one person that, I'm supposed to be with, then it would be possible for us to stay together and to stay in love for the rest of our lives. I mean, we somehow have this picture of like, I'm going to be, holding my wife's hand at, 87, 92 years old. We're going to be shuffling down the nursing home corridor, like walker to walker. We're going to sit down in that cafe and people are going to come in. And they're going to be like, how did you do it? You've been married 65 years. How did you do it? And see, I think, and this is just my opinion, I don't have a verse to back this up or anything, but do you know what that is that we long for that? I think that's God's image all over us. I think that's God's thumbprint in our lives of wanting to be in a deep, deep relationship, an intimate relationship with a spouse, somebody, something that's way different than any other relationship in our lives. And so the answer to the Juno question is yeah, I think it is possible. I think it's possible. Now, I'm not sure it's probable. When I look around at everybody's marriage failing or struggling, I'm not sure it'll happen. I think it's possible. I'm just not sure it's probable. And you know what we really haven't talked about in this series? We only need to spend like 10 seconds on it. We haven't talked about falling in love, right? I mean, because everybody knows how you do that, right? You pretty much have to have a pulse. And as long as you're alive, like you fall in love with people on TV that you don't even know. You're like, oh, I love her. You're like, she reads the news, for God's sake. I mean, she's just doing the weather, all right? You're like, oh, I'm in love with her. And so, we fall in love all over the place. In fact, a couple weekends ago, Eric was talking about how, I think there's something like 2,500 organizations today that you can give your money to and your profile, and they will match you up with somebody that has a similar profile, right? And so, there's more and more. You may not agree with this, but it's easier to fall in love today than it ever has been because of all the ways we can get connected with people. And yet, I think that, I would argue, and you probably would agree, that it's never been more difficult to stay in love than it is today. And yet we want it. And we think it's possible. And we think we're a candidate for it if we can find the right one. And yet it's more and more difficult. And there's plenty of reasons why. And you know some of these, but for some of us, the truth is we've never seen or been around a healthy romantic marriage relationship, right? We're like, or at least tracked with it over the years. Maybe you saw it once, but then you didn't have the opportunity to observe what that looked like. Like growing up in a home where your parents just, loved each other all the time. And you're like, that's what I hope for and long for in my life. Very few people have actually seen that through a good part of their life. And so consequently, what most of us have is really bad images of it, really bad examples, and we take those models and implement them in our lives, and we wonder why we can't stay together, right? And for instance, you probably grew up with this mentality that, like do unto others as they deserve, right? Or do unto others as you think they need to be done unto, or do unto others whatever needs to happen for you to get your own way. I mean, that's kind of the way that we generally live in marriage today. And so consequently, we've been around models that aren't healthy, and we've experienced those. And so it's no wonder we have a hard time understanding how to romantically stay in love. The other thing that I think, makes it really difficult is what we felt growing up, all right? In fact, a bunch of smart guys, actually men and women both, got together, and they basically came up with a list, and this list is kind of overwhelming, to be honest with you, when you see it. And it's really good for those of you dedicating, babies or children today, because this is critical to be happening in your home. But they came up with this list of all the things that are critically important to happen with children in the home over the long haul of you raising them, all right? Basically, these characteristics, when these happen in your home, these things have to happen in order for your children to grow up and to be able to engage in healthy romantic relationships, all right? And so here's all it takes for that to happen, all right? Here you go. You have to have respect in like massive doses of these things, all right? This isn't like, well, I respected her once. This is like all the time in generous ways. Encouragement, comfort, security, support, acceptance, approval, appreciation, attention, and affection. Sounds like the family you grew up in, right? You got all those in dose of, you know, massive doses all the time. I mean, you need to constantly be getting respect, encouragement, comfort, security. Security is like where there's the same people are there all the time. Like somebody's not coming in for a period of time and then leaving, or they're there till a certain point and then they're done and not interact, you know, part of the home anymore. I mean, you know, and so this is what it takes to equip us, all of this in massive doses, for us to be equipped to engage in healthy romantic relationships. And we look at that and we're like, well, who's going to have that? What are the odds of somebody actually being able to live happily ever after, forever and ever? Because having that in our home all the time is nearly impossible. And so consequently, what happens is we come into a relationship with somebody else who also hasn't had those things happening in their home. Respect, encouragement, approval, attention, respect, you know, all these things. And so, you know, and you fall in love with that person, and they're wondering, are you going to give these things to me? You know, because I didn't get it in my home growing up. And or are you just going to be like cute or have a good job? And so that's why we're together. So like we need these things. And this is what actually formed our relationship when we fell in love. There was all this emotional energy and you make me feel secure and give me affection and attention and encouragement and comfort and security. And I love that. And then over time that begins to fade away. And you're like, well, you just don't seem so cute anymore now that you're not doing all that for me. And so, you know, and then on top of that, there's a message that we get every single day. And you may not even know you're getting this message, but there's a message that comes at you all the time that says, if you're not happy in your current relationship, then you just must have chose the wrong person. You chose wrong. You're a bad chooser. I don't know if you knew that or not, but you're a bad chooser, all right? And so that's the message we get. You need to go out and re-choose. You need to find that one special person somewhere, somehow, somewhere out in the universe that if you could get with them, then you might be able to live happily ever after. But what's fascinating, so if you talk to anybody that's been married 20 years or more and they're happily married, and there's very few of those people, they would tell you, if you know, what's the key to staying in love? They'd say, you know what? There were many times where I thought I chose wrong, but you know what? I didn't. And I've realized I didn't choose wrong. I chose the right person. It's more understanding what's going on in me. All right. In fact, 2 weeks ago, we looked at Mr. and Mrs. Mugg. Remember Mr. and Mrs. Mugg? They used to sit up here with me. They didn't come today. I'm not sure why they're not here. But you know, they had beads inside of them. And if you don't know Mr. and Mrs. Mugg, you need to get to know them. You need to go back to week one of the podcast and listen to meet them. But we learned that, you know, in a relationship, Mr. Mugg and Mrs. Mugg come together, and they every now and then they bump into each other, and stuff comes out of the mug, like beads go all over the place. And so many times we point the finger at our spouse and say, well, you did this. You created this. I didn't have anger issues till I met you. And then we realize that the stuff comes out because it's actually in there. That my spouse doesn't actually make it come out. It comes out because it's inside of me and I've got to work through that stuff. And so choosing the right person is a part of it, but learning to become the right person is the other part of it. And that's something we get no help from in our culture today. So, you know, we could just stop right there, and you might go, well, Kurt, is it possible? Is the Juno question? What's the answer? Well, it's possible. It's possible for two people to stay together, but probably not probable. With everything I've seen, I don't know that it's probable. So into this chaos, this picture right here, Jesus speaks. And so 2,000 years ago, he's hanging with his guys, and he gives this key foundation to enduring relationships. In fact, he gives a key foundation to enduring romantic relationships. I mean, that kind of relationship where you're like, I can't wait for her to come home. I can't wait to hear the garage door go up because I know he's here. I can't wait to be with him or with her later tonight. I mean, throughout your entire life. And so this thing Jesus talks about is so simple, and yet it's so counterintuitive. It's totally different than the way we think. And so we have to have kind of a paradigm shift here. And even when I say it to you, even when I tell you what Jesus says here, you're going to go, oh, yeah, I've heard that before. Kurt, what else you got? I mean, seriously, like, bring it today. Because, you know, like he came with me. Like, he's here. He's never here. Like, you need to, like, bring the boom down today. You know, you're like hoping I really bring something strong. Well, this is powerful. This is one of the most powerful concepts that Jesus teaches. It's so powerful, yet it's so simple, and it's available to all of us if we would simply apply this basic teaching into our lives. So in John chapter 13, verse 34, we're going to look at one verse, and if you want to follow along in the Crosspoint app, you can hit the Bible button. It'll take you right to this verse, and here's what Jesus says when he's got his guys together. He says this. He leads with this. He says, a new commandment I give to you. Now, basically saying, hey, all right, guys, I know you got the Ten Commandments a long time ago in the Old Testament, and then you got the 700 and something commandments in the Old Testament that kind of complement that, but I'm going to give you a new one. And then he says, but, you know, and I don't know if it's like fully new or if they just hadn't seen it before, because even the Greek word new could mean things like remarkable. It can mean something like a new discovery, like something that we just hadn't seen before but had been there all along. It could be, you know, extraordinary. And so this concept could have been there and they just hadn't discovered it before. But basically he's saying, I'm going to give you a remarkable command. In fact, it's going to be so remarkable, you're going to be unimpressed with it, all right? You're going to sit there and go, really? That's all you got? And you're going to have to sit on this a while, because it's only when you sit on it that you begin to realize how powerful this is, all right? So here's his command. Here's what he gives them. He says, I want you to love one another. That's what I got for you today. Some of you are like, Kurt, you should have studied more. That's it. So here's what Jesus does. Here's what Jesus does. And this will slip right by if you don't pay attention to this right here. All right? Jesus takes a word that normally is used as a noun, and he makes it a verb. He makes it an imperative. He makes a command. He says, hey, here's the deal. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go. I want you to actively go and love. An active thing. All right. I know love is something you, like a swimming pool you fall into or a high chair you fall out of. I know that's what we think of love. You know, it's something I just fall into. We're not talking a noun anymore. It's something I go do. I'm making it not a noun here. It's now becoming a verb. I want you to go love one another, which means Jesus would have been a terrible marriage counselor, in case you were wondering, all right? Because, I mean, Jesus, I mean, relationship, probably at least, I mean, because it would have gone something like this. You'd come to Jesus, and he'd be like, all right, what's going on? And you'd be like, well, she this, and she that, and if she just, or he just. And Jesus, you know what he'd do? He'd look at you, and he's like, here's what I want to know. Are you loving her? Well, I used to. He's like, no, not used to. That's a noun. This is a verb. Are you loving her? Well, she, no. Here's, I want to fix your relationship for you. This is what he'd probably say. I want to fix this for you. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go home, and I want you to love each other. And you go, well, but we don't love each other. He's like, that's the problem. See, you're making love a noun. This isn't a noun. You got to think of love like a verb. You're talking about feeling it. You're talking about you want to do something to help you feel love. All right? No, you have to actually go do it, and then you begin to feel it. See, when we started our relationships, when we were dating, engaged, it was all about the feeling, right? It was about, oh, you make me feel a certain way. You make me feel that list, accepted, affirmed, encouraged. And so we say, well, if I want to feel that again, and I've lost it, well, how do I get it back? Well, that happens when I met somebody for the first time. So I need to go back out and find somebody new to get the feeling back. And Jesus is like, no. That's not how it works. The way you maintain a growing love relationship, the way you fan the flame and you blow into the embers and, you know, fire them up, is you actually quit making love a noun and you make love a verb. So I want you to go home and I want you to love each other. See, here's the bottom line. The foundation for staying in love is to make love, pause, a verb. The foundation to staying in love is to make love, pause, a verb. See, now I have your attention, don't I? See? So let's just say that in church together, because that's such an awesome statement right there, all right? Here we go. The foundation for staying in love is to make love, pause, a verb. All right, see what Jesus is saying is you got to make love a verb. I mean, we think of it as a noun. It's like something I did or used to do, or, you know, no, you know, we think we have to recapture the feeling. Well, the feeling is actually the caboose of the train. All right, when we started our relationship, the feeling was at the front, right? That's what drove us into each other, and we always wanted to be together. We couldn't stay off of each other. But he says, you know, real love actually drives the feeling. And so the feeling is actually at the end of the train. So I want to tell you something I'm not going to tell anybody else. Like, this can't get out of the room today, all right? Here's a little secret for you, all right? When you, the more you make love a verb, the more you're going to make love. All right? I'm just saying. Now, you didn't hear that from me, but it's true. The more you make love a verb, the more you're going to make love. Jesus says, I want you to go, and I want you to love one another. Action, verb. And he doesn't stop there. He actually goes on. Maybe this is the new part. Maybe this is what he was saying. Hey, I've got something new for you. He says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. And here's the rest of it. Just as I have loved you, you are also to love another. In other words, he's saying, I don't want you to just take your cue from culture. I mean, there's a lot of cool things happening in culture. Culture can be redeemed, but there's a lot of bad pictures of love in our culture. I don't want you to just look at culture and say, oh, that's what it means to love. He says, I don't necessarily want you to take your cue from your parents. All right? I mean, you have to think, was that a good, healthy relationship? Or did they just survive? Maybe they're still together, but, you know, like she moved upstairs and he moved downstairs. They each have their own kitchen, and he'd rather go on vacation with the dog than her. All right? I mean, they're surviving. They might be together, but don't take your cue from that kind of relationship. You know, don't even take your cue from like your in-laws or fiance's family or, you know, your sister that you always looked up to. He says, here's what I want you to do. Here's what I want you to do. When you think about love as a verb, I want you to take your cue from me. I want you to allow me, and you have to allow me. I want you to allow me to teach you not how to fall in love. I want you to allow me to teach you how to stay in love. And the way you stay in love is by making love a verb. It's not a noun. It's a verb. All right, everybody with me? All right. So years later, the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, years after Jesus was here, he basically says the same thing. All right, he says almost the same thing, except he uses a really bad word. All right, and it's a word we don't like at all. You know, it's a word that's gotten Christians into trouble historically over the years. Christians throw this word out and people get all their panties up in a bunch and everything. And, you know, because the word's so offensive to some people that like you hear the word and then you're like, I don't pay attention to anything else Paul said because he's irrelevant because he used that word. All right, so the Apostle Paul is really just recommunicating an idea that Jesus taught. He just uses a different word other than love. And it's a word that, like, when it sticks, it just lands a little harder, all right? And it's, when you see it, you're going to be like, oh, well, now, wait a second, Kurt. I'm not sure I can do that. I mean, I was with you on the Jesus part. Not sure I like the way Paul put it. And so this is an extraordinarily powerful word to illustrate simply the idea of love one another, all right? So here's what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5. He starts right off with the bad word. Submit. Whoa, we hate the word submit, right? Submit to one another. And then here's the Jesus part again, out of reverence for Christ. You know what that means right there? That means love one another. That's what that means. It just has a barb on it. That word submit's like a barb that gets stuck that we don't like, right? And we're not going to talk too much about this today. We'll dive way deeper into this next week. But what he's talking about right here is this whole idea of a husband and a wife. This starting block for a healthy, growing romantic relationship is this idea of mutual submission. You know what mutual submission is? Mutual submission is where you say, hey, I say to Julie, hey, Julie, you're the priority in our relationship. She goes, no, Kurt, I'm not the priority, you're the priority. Oh, no, you're the priority. No, you're the priority. We, you know, you kind of go back and forth. No, you're first. No, you're first. In other words, the biggest conflict you ever have, you know, in your marriage is who's going to be the priority. Meaning, you say it's me, and I say it's you, and we're just in this cycle of continuing to put one another first. And when you see this, if you ever see this, it's very, very powerful. And Paul and Jesus are both saying, love as a verb, one another is the foundation of this. Submit to as a verb, one another is the foundation. Now, what does submit mean? Submit means that you place yourself under the other person. Right, not because of birth order, not because of, you know, socioeconomic status or what you brought into the marriage or anything like that, or some other caste system. All right, no, you place yourself willingly under the other person, regardless of who you are, regardless of whether you're male or female, and regardless of who you're related to or what you brought in. It's me choosing to place myself under my spouse to submit and to undergird and lift them up. And I know some of you are thinking, Kurt, that didn't even make sense. You know why? Because you rarely see it. But I tell you what, when you see it, when you encounter it, when you get into one of these relationships, you're gonna realize this is the foundation for staying in love. Not staying married, but staying in love. Jesus says, I want you to love one another. And then he's like, but there's a caveat. There's a caveat, all right? As I have loved you. Paul says, I want you to submit to one another. And then he says, but there's a little bit more. out of reverence for Christ. In other words, I want you to learn to love. I want you to begin to learn to submit to one another. I want you to learn to take your cue, not from culture, not from your parents, not from anybody else in your life that you've seen that might get close. I want you to take your cue from me of what it means to love and what it means to submit. We're going to dive into this way deeper next week. Now, let me tell you about one of the greatest things that I get to do in my profession as a pastor. I love when I see pictures like this. I love when, you know, and I've been a minister for like almost 21 years now. And one of the awesome things that I get to experience in my role is when I see a man who grew up in a home and maybe there's all kinds of dysfunction going on in that home and in terms of relationships. And you're just like, oh man, he missed a lot of that list that we just showed. And then you see a woman who grows up in a home and she never saw any of this idea of mutual submission. She also missed a lot of those characteristics, you know, and they become Christians. And they begin to make Jesus the leader of their life. And they say, Jesus, you know, we want your will in our lives, not necessarily what we want, but I want what you want in my life. And so they learn to accept the ways of Jesus and implement the ways of Jesus in their life because they've never seen this in their family before. They've never seen this exhibited before. And they like have this complete mental shift that takes place in their life. And it begins to change them, and they begin to even view themselves in a completely different way. And so all that stuff on the list that we looked at a few minutes ago, they didn't get that from their grandma or from their, you know, their father or from their mother, but they begin to be healed by Jesus because they begin to realize that I've been looking for acceptance from my dad my whole life. No, it's Jesus that gives acceptance to me. I've been looking for encouragement from my mom my whole life, and I've never got it. Oh, it's Jesus that actually gives me my worth and my value. And there's a healing, there's a restoration that begins to take place. And all this stuff in their background, all this junk in their past, you know, they bring into this point where they actually then get married. And you look at them and you're like, there is no way that thing's ever going to last. I mean, they are so dysfunctional. They've come from such a dysfunctional family and picture. And by the way, I'm not talking about any of you, though it could apply to all of us, right? I mean, in case you're wondering, you're like, how did Kurt know? I get that all the time. How did you know? I'm like, I didn't. It's amazing. We all deal with this stuff. But you look at them and I'm like, the odds of them making it. And then guess what? They do. And you like scratch beneath the surface a little bit and you're like, what is it that allowed them to make it out of such a dysfunctional past? And you know what it is? You begin to see that they've learned to love each other, not by what they saw, not by what they grew up in, not by, you know, the culture around them. They learned to love each other and taught one another to love out of the love that they see in Christ for his church. The way that Jesus says, lay down your life as I have laid my life down for you. And they're like, okay, is that it? And they nail it. And the odds of them making it from the surface, you're like, there's no way. And yet, they have found a love because they've taken their submission cues from the one who modeled before us and gave himself for us. And they'd be like, man, we're not just married. Right? We're not just staying together. Man, we're genuinely in love. Is it possible for two people to fall in love and stay in love forever? Absolutely. Absolutely. But it doesn't happen because you powerfully like fall in love at the beginning or, man, we had a really momentum, you know, start at the momentum and we were all over each other, couldn't stay off each other. It was great. And that, no, it happens because you daily choose. You say, I'm going to make love a verb, not a noun. I'm going to love one another and I'm going to mutually submit to one another. Every single day you decide. Every single day you say, you know what, you're first. No, I'm going to do this for you first. I mean, sometimes you don't even get in the building because you're trying to hold the door for everybody. You know, you're like, you know, it's this kind of relationship. And I tell you what, it can get better. I tell Julie all the time, man, if I had it to do over again, I'd marry you every single time. Every single time. I write that to her in cards. I tell her every now and then. The only thing I tell her is I do it quicker. I do it quicker. Now, some of you that are like thinking about getting engaged, you're like, oh, I'm going to use that line. I'd marry you every single time. I just do it quicker. So let's go right now. All right, you need to wait. Don't move too fast. All right, but I'm telling you, Julie and I, what we've had now over 20 years coming this summer isn't because I picked the only one or the right one. Listen, I think when we got married, I had a few other options. She had tons of options, man. I just had a few, but she had, I mean, her field was wide open. But it wasn't because we picked the right one. It was because we did the right things. And there's been bumps along the way. But when you choose the right things every day and you make love a verb every single day, then you begin to find this is how you stay in love. So here's what I want us to do. We're going to get real specific on this next week, all right? But I want you to take your connection cards out. We're going to look at some next steps on the back of your connection card or in your Crosspoint app if you're using your phone for your app. And we're going to look next week at what does mutual submission mean? I mean, how does that get lived out? How do I mutually submit to my spouse? And I want you to be ready for this discussion, all right? And so what I want you to do is there's a scripture we're going to look at next week on mutual submission, and there's a couple questions after that that are in the app. In fact, it's in the homework button on the app. If you hit the homework button underneath this week in the app, it'll take you right to this. And so you can also get to this page by texting. If you don't have the Crosspoint app, just text the word homework to 25827, and it will send you a link back, and that will give you a web page to get to the homework for this week. And here's the big ask. All right, big ask for this week is, will you read this passage every day? I want you to read Philippians 2, like 3 through 8, every single day this week, and then there's a few questions for you to answer after you read it. And you can just add to your reflections each day. So answer it day one, and what's amazing is you're going to read it the next day, and you're going to answer something different because your experience is different and the scripture hits you differently. All right, because this is so powerful what we're going to look at next week. I don't want us to just start, you know, like cold turkey. I want you to be kind of diving into this week. And then answer these questions. And the question is, if I'm in a relationship, what would it look like if I began to experience and live out, and my spouse lived out, what happens in Philippians chapter 2? And if you're not in a relationship, what would that look like in a future relationship? And here's the thing, if you're married and you're doing this, I don't really want you to talk about it this week, okay? It'd be better if you get through the teaching next week before you dialogue, because you might end up coming to like two different services next week if you dive into this too quick, all right? You might like sit on opposite ends of the venue, and then we're going the wrong direction, all right? So I just want you to reflect on this individually this week and then answer the questions. So that's one next step. A couple other ones. We've got this Love Dare thing going on. I think there's hundreds of us now tracking in the Love Dare Challenge, which is a book that has a 40-day journey where you every day read a page or two, and then it gives you a challenge to implement with your spouse. And so if your marriage is in a great place and you just want to get better, then I would recommend this. If your marriage is, you know, struggling and you're like, man, we need to get to a healthier place, you need to do the Love Dare Challenge. It will get you to a healthier place. If you're hanging on by a thread, in fact, a few people I've talked to recently, they're like, man, we're getting divorced. I'd say, you know what? Just wait. Before you do that, do the Love Dare Challenge. Take 40 days and do this, and then see if change begins to happen. Because I believe that this process of taking in and beginning to reorient my heart toward what God desires and toward the person he gave me forever and ever, that there's a change that he can begin to bring about. So these books are available at Connection Point for $8. It tells you how to pay for them in there. If you pick one up, you can just take one. If you can't afford it, just take it. We're not so concerned about, you know, paying for it as we are getting it in your hands. You can go to Amazon and get a Kindle version. But take the Love Dare Challenge. We've got a couple initiatives coming up. We've got Movie in the Parking Lot. You know, great place to make love a verb. You know, go out, take your spouse to dinner. Come over and do a movie. Invite your friends. All right, be proactive. And then, of course, the vow renewals at the end of the series. If you've been through something difficult or just had a momentum moment, or maybe you just didn't know that you were going to make it and you're in a healthier place, or you are beginning to see God's foundation for marriage and you've never understood that and you want to reaffirm that commitment, man, sign up for vow renewals. It'll be a great, great day. So we're going to do some baby child dedications in a moment. Before we do that, let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, man, I just thank you, God, for this picture that you gave us, this picture in the most dramatic way possible of what it means to love one another, what it means to submit through one another to one another. And you gave it to us in the picture of Jesus. God, I just pray that this would be trajectory changing for us, that maybe some of us for the first time would begin to do this and to make love a verb in our relationships. And I just pray that you'd help us to take our cue from you for the way that you laid your life down for us. May we do that with the person that we love. God, for the couple in here this morning that's just hanging on by a thread. Maybe they decided to give it a few more weeks. They heard we had a relationship series going on at church. They said, well, let's see if that makes any difference. Father, would you please, please, please just honor their faith? And would you please honor their desire to make things work, even when it seems that all is lost? Father, for those of us who are here today and maybe our spouse isn't with us, the one that we're in love with isn't here, God, I just pray that you give us the wisdom to know what to do with what we heard today. And Father, many of us, hundreds of us are going to be doing the homework this week. We're going to be reading about your picture of mutual submission. And I just pray, God, that this would penetrate our hearts and that we would be the men and women that you created us to be to begin with. And God, as we begin to carry this out and live this out, God, I just pray that your grace, your loving grace would wash over our lives. God, I pray that your loving grace would wash over every single relationship in this room, because we're going to need it as we continue to grow in our love relationship with the person that you put into our lives and intended to be there forever and ever. So just wash over us right now. Pray these things according to your name, Jesus, your character and your identity.